Media Network.
It's Roast with KM Bell and Tom. Here are your Roastmasters.
Oh, there it goes.
All right, very good. Excellent.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome today to the Holy Scripture Church. I would like to talk to you about the evils of pornography and social media. Remember when browsing the inappropriate nakedness of all of Lucifer's sin pages? To do so under a pseudonym or a fake name, and not your official Senate campaign account? I think the best line I saw this week on that is that, you know, looking at pornography on the internet is without a doubt the single most rational thing Ted Cruz has ever done.
Yeah, it'd be really good to go over this, you know, with some musical background to describe what exactly happens. You know, because it's basically it's a heartwarming, you know, video. I know everyone's seen it. You know, everyone's reacted to it and whatever way they want to. But, you know, when a woman comes into her house, okay, and, you know, seems to realize that there are two other people in the house, I wasn't really quite getting what their relelationship was.
It was her stepdaughter and her stepdaughter's boyfriend. Because, Tom, let me tell you something.
Her stepdaughter's boyfriend, okay.
I do the research, sir, so that you don't have to.
So I don't pretend to be innocent. So nevertheless, so what happens is, so her stepdaughter and her stepdaughter's boyfriend, okay, are involved in concubinage. No, they're actually involved in coitus. Okay.
Doggy style is what the kids are calling it these days.
Openly. That's what the crazy kids are doing. It's a heartwarming, it's a loving, you know, kind of like experience because, you know, they're talking back and forth, making whatever. And it's your heart goes out to them. You know, the kids, you know, they're giving it all these days. And what does she do? What does stepmom do? Well, stepmom doesn't actually come in and break it up like some, you know, really bad, you know, monster. No. What she does instead is that she observes and she reacts to it in such a way so that it provides itself a perfect 1 or 2 minute clip so that Ted Cruz at some point, not only who's watching it, likes it and goes to sleep and forgets completely about it. Meanwhile, the internet blows up and he's quickly reminded that he is indeed an asshole. Not only is he an asshole, not only is he a hypocrite, here's a guy who has railed against people who freely choose whoever they want to love in life, yeah, whether they're gay or whatever, transgendered, and also for some particular reason was on some kind of board where you couldn't where we tried to outlaw adult toys in the state of Texas. A complete rank utter hypocrite. It couldn't happen to a more better person. Well, a more better person than Ted. I don't want to say Ted Nugent, but what's the difference? Ted Cruz.
Yeah, here's the thing. I feel bad for, you know, generic fake staffer. That poor guy can't catch a break.
You know? It was a staff problem.
Yeah, all I know is Anthony Weiner standing over to the side going, "Are you fucking kidding me? Are you fucking kidding me with this? I get in trouble for a giant cock and I got to listen to this guy over here blame a staffer?" Sorry, buddy. It's Republicans protect their perverts better than Dems do. Always have. Mark Foley.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
What was it? Dennis Hastert? You fucking lunatics.
Oh, my God. Dennis Hastert.
All you got to do, sir, is praise Jesus and the mighty dollar over humans, and you can do whatever you want with your penis. But by God, if you think social justice is important and you get blown by an intern, you know, you get a guy on his third marriage who's telling you how family values work.
Not only that, but a guy who's like grotesquely, I don't want to, I don't want to weight shame somebody, but in this case, this particular individual is not only a hideous looking individual, but as he is married to his second wife, he's actually banging one of the office help downstairs in the congressional parking lot in his or her car. Nevertheless, he will soon walk out on wife number two because she has told him she has MS. He, of course, walked out on wife number one while she was in the hospital undergoing cancer, having cancer surgery regarding cancer, and walked back in with a list of demands regarding the divorce. Not only that, but regarding wifey number two, he was confronted by this. He was confronted by the wife number two, about the affair. And he said to her, "You will absorb this. You will take this." Huh. This monster, I'm talking about Newt Gingrich. Of course, I'm talking about Newt Gingrich, one of the most physically unattractive human beings. I don't even understand how anybody else could have sex with him.
That comes down to Republican women liking power and money more than their own rights and freedoms. And to be honest, I don't think it's about fat shaming. I think what it's about is that Newt Gingrich is a sentient 2 pounds of oatmeal. Okay, in a wet burlap 1 pound sack. That is what Newt Gingrich is. And I don't give a flying fuck. I am a fat white guy. And I am sure that naked, I am no goddamn treat. But Newt Gingrich makes all fat white guys super unattractive just by being a fat white guy. You know, I mean, and I know I'm not supposed to classify people by race, but yeah, if, you know. It's just like, I got enough issue problems without us both being able to fit with the same goddamn descriptors, you chubby fucker. So, I'm just saying that, you know, fat white guy, as a fat white guy, only I'm allowed to say that.
Yes. Okay.
Right. I'm not fat shaming. That just takes one to know one.
I am not within the weight classification that I should, or there is no should, there's no must.
So you are a svelte motherfucker. Let me just tell you that right now. I've seen pictures.
I look at myself and I weep openly. I look at the mirror and I said, I had Anchorman hair. I am a soulless ginger. I look at that red hair and it's gone. It's gone.
How about when I'm slightly off weight?
I also the hair is gone. So it's just like you take a look at me and go, how can my wife love me? It's a miracle.
Here's the thing, sir. As a fellow soulless ginger, when the ink cartridge in my hair output printer went dry and it started coming out whitish blonde, why didn't I get a soul? You know, if the ginger part is the reason that I was born soulless, now that it's white instead of red, what the fuck? You know what I mean?
WTF indeed.
I
think that we've had this conversation before and it's helped me understand the other, because being that other individual that you'd be chased down the street and beaten up, I get it. So when I see it happening to other people, it makes me very, very angry. So there's a lot that's been happening, and all I could say is, with the incredible titanic amount of karma that must be building up in the orange Cheeto, I hope it is loading up like the great Missoula flood that's about to break.
Tom,
nobody knows when shit like this is going to happen.
Tom,
but the cataclysm that occurred was so great. It would only compare to Katrina and Bush.
Tom.
Sir, you have the floor.
I got to tell you two things. Two things that are proven by what we're talking about. One, there are no aliens that have ever visited the United States, and there are no spaceships in Area 51. And we know that.
We know that.
Because he wouldn't be able to keep his fucking yap shut about it. We had the best spaceships. We had the best alien crashes. Huge. Yeah,
so Independence Day.
Do that. And two, sir, there's no fucking karma. There's no karma. There is no such thing as karma, because the way this piece of shit has lived his life, this sentient trans fat has lived his life, there is no way you get to where you are now like this if there's karma. And you know what? I can paint that on people like even Mitt Romney. Or what's a tubby fuck, the oatmeal sack. There is no karma, because karma would have fucking spontaneously combusted these guys years ago. Karma is a fallacy and a myth, and it is proven by the success and elevation of those that are like that. You know, karma would have put Bernie Sanders in the White House. Karma, you know, would have made the electoral vote swing towards Hillary, because, you know, even though she's a shitty candidate, I think she's a nice, smart lady. And I'm actually quite disappointed with her behavior out schlepping her book right now. But, yeah, there's no fucking karma. There's no karma. There's no invisible universal justice floating around anywhere. It's not, man. It's a goddamn crapshoot. And it's a crapshoot with loaded dice. The worse you are, the better you'll do. And that's just it. And I mean, it you know, I'm not going to change who I am to succeed. I live in Utah, and Utah has the highest rate of people conning old folks out of their fucking money than anywhere else in the United States. We have a $1 billion con man theft problem in Utah right now. Billions, multi-billions in every year. And the thing is it's like, I have done the little tool that we learned in acting class 1,000 years ago, where I take a step away from who I am, no matter how hard that is. I take a step away from who I am, and I try and think my way toward some direction that somebody's done something. And in the case of these guys that steal all of this money from people, I take that step back. I can't figure out what their first step towards that was. I can't get there. I've tried just to think about it. I'm not going to steal money from old people, but it takes a special kind of fucked up to behave in this way, to succeed at it, and then to turn around at those that you have screwed over and mock them the way that fancy Republicans do, and that wealthy Republicans do.
Oh, and how they mock them, but you know what? A girl can dream.
I know, buddy.
What can we do? And that's the first. That indeed is. That's
if
the first segment.
If there were karma, I would have won the lotto the last time I played. Because the last time I played, I was in the middle of a huge batch of very selfless behaviors, philanthropic giving, you know, and social betterment. And I played, and I didn't even match one fucking number, and that's it. You know, and I'm not trying to you know, polish my own knob at the moment, or toot my own horn.
At this.
Too fat for that. But, you know, it's like, I'm kind of an asshole sometimes. I'm a little bit caustic.
Well, who isn't?
I've done my best to perfect it. Let's be honest. You know, I mean, I went back and started reading some of my old blog posts from when I went off of the HTML. I told you I was writing blogs before there were blogs, and that's not a millennial hipster thing to say. I had a website in the late 90s where I wrote political commentary.
Holy shit, really?
Yeah, it was called the Zen Gazette. And it was just a back page on one of my websites for one of my businesses. And I did. And I did that until LiveJournal came on, and I tried that for a little while. And then somewhere around 2005, people were talking about blogging, and I'm like, I'm not going to blog. What the fuck is blogging? Didn't know I was already doing it.
It's web blogging.
Yeah, I had no idea. And we were at a buddy of mine and I were at an AFL-CIO, basically what would now be called a social media training, and then we were just doing communication refreshing. And they started talking about blogs, and it started to sound familiar, and I'm like, oh, well, I already do that, but that's just something I do with my friends to make each other laugh. It's like a newsletter that families send one another from time to time. It was the way that I thought about it. And then the very nice lady, whose name was Erin, as I recall, because she was very tall and pretty, and she said the thing that got me moving, and that was, if you aren't writing and publishing about your issues, somebody else will, and you will no longer control your message. That was a terrifying thing for her to say. And I had a blog for my job, which was with the Democratic Party at the time, before we got out of that block of the training set up. You know, I mean, it was that important. And so I started doing that. So I went back about sometime in this last week. It's been in, we can talk about this in the third segment, but it's been a rough couple of weeks here at the studio. And
likewise,
I was feeling nostalgic for, it was like, where's my fire? I used to just be fucking burning to make the statement, to get my point across. And I know full well that the podcast and my weekly, you know, rants, they do take some of that energy out of me, which should have turned into reasonable, you know, op-ed construction. And instead has turned into, I don't write much anymore. So I went back and looked at some of the stuff starting in about 2005 and moving on. And for a couple of years, through 2008 or 9 there, you know, it seemed like my entire motivation was to do what I could to make any Republican that argued with me cry. And there was a little bit, the humanity in me that thinks it's a soul, but because I'm a redhead, apparently I don't get, was like, wow, you were kind of a dick. And then another part of me was like, well, you were kind of a dick standing up for the little guy. So, whereas
our what friends, is it? One or the other?
Our friends on the right are, you know, dicks to stand up for a couple of folks that look and sound like them and go to their churches and are part of their secret societies. And me, I just wanted to keep nuclear waste off the Ghost Chute Reservation. And then, instead of stopping there, to find a way to help out the Ghost Chute Reservation, so that they didn't have to feel like the only goddamn option they had was to store high-grade nuclear waste on their goddamn land. You know? And so if I'm going to be a douchebag and I'm going to be an asshole because of that, I forgive myself. And that's really big of me.
Most excellent, yes. Oh, my God.
Hey, self-forgiveness leads to much better masturbation.
So let's call that a good first segment.
Okay.
And we'll go out with this, and then we'll come back.
Play me out, maestro.
In about a minute.
Folks, Jeff here.
And JC here.
Oh, and Taylor.
I want to talk to you about Patreon. Patreon is how, for the most part, we are paying the bills around here.
Come on, help us pay some bills.
It's important. These shows cost money to both make and distribute, and we don't ask for money very often. And what we're asking for here is you, as a listener, pitching in $5, $10 a month, you know, over the course of the year to help us grow and get bigger. We need it now. More than ever.
But look, you're not just throwing us money. We're going to give you something really unique for your money. Normally, everything you get from us is free. You get a free download of our podcast, The Left Show, the world's greatest podcast, comic book podcast, and of course,
the truck stop visits.
Yeah, the truck stop visits and Geek Therapist. And instead, we're going to give you exclusive content, stuff that we record separately that is then put out for only you to listen to.
Yeah, and I don't have dollar restrictions on that stuff. You pitch in $5 a month, you pitch in $25 a month, that's it. There are goals there if you do throw in a little bit extra. We send you presents as soon as I can find them.
Yeah.
And for those of you that are waiting for presents, I just need to find the boxes. Don't worry about it. But no, with Geek Therapist, the world's greatest comic book podcast, and of course this, The Left Show, and our exclusive content, you get more as a Patreon member of our family than you do anywhere else. So go to the website for your favorite of the Defend Media families, whether that be theleftshow.com, worldsgreatestpodcast.com, or geektherapist.com. Click on the Patreon button, become a part of the family, and start getting the cool shit nobody else is getting.
You know you want it. You know you do.
Just do it. I'm Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo. We were a loving family. And then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day. People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything. I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at embracerefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
I love that. Let me, as we move forward, make a quick apology. You're going to hear me like coughing and clearing my throat a lot. I've got some sort of weird ass respiratory infection I cannot shake. And I just did a voiceover job that's now I turned in a couple of weeks late because I can't fucking breathe. To the point that I stole one of my kids' inhalers to see, maybe I have asthma now. I got diabetes in my 40s. Maybe this is something too.
Why not?
And nah, it didn't help. Tasted funny. But so I am coughing a little. I am clearing my throat. And I don't like that particular noise. I sound a little stuffed up. I hope that the listeners can forgive us my trespasses. But, you know, I am what I am.
I have I come to the table full of either regrets that we couldn't have done better, that we couldn't that we're all trying to boost each other in this time of great and terrible stress. If anything, it was 100,000 votes in three states that literally made the difference. And now we're picking up the pieces and trying to figure out what went wrong.
Why are you picking up pieces when the you know, the detritus is still falling from the sky in fiery meteors?
Well, because eventually it will come to us to be able to reverse a lot of these horrible decisions that are coming down right now. We're adults. I mean, what is the most appropriate job for an adult is to change the world. We believe it. I mean, it's our responsibility. We're grown-ups now. We affect it in small ways in which we can. Maybe it's we have a family. Maybe we keep the peace and we keep things stable. It could be anything. It could be something that somebody contributes. Who knows? I try not to relive what went on. I mean, now that we're in the middle of September,
what happened
months ago?
What happened, Tom?
I think
show me on the doll. What happened?
I think what it goes like this is, one of the NBC reporters who was embedded with the Trump campaign finally came out with a book.
Yeah. The lady. I can't remember her name all of a sudden.
Kitty Turr. Now, I'm really surprised, you know, Trump didn't really make a more derogatory comment about her last name. But that's neither here nor there. I would
right
say
there, Kitty Turr.
She's got it. This is a piece from her book. And I think among all of those people who put up with the greatest amount of abuse from that monster, she really showed a great amount of professionalism and poise.
Oh, absolutely.
And she's smart, and she knew exactly what to do. I still think that it still leaves people with what are we to do? Because I'll And there are going to be moments where I'm just not going to say anything. I'm just going to be completely silent about stuff. So if I come to a pause, I'm thinking about saying things instead of umming and aahing about stuff.
Okay.
All normative, everything normative came to an end within the last 2 years. So it goes like this. Trump Victory Party, New York Hilton, Midtown, 10:59, Election Day. I'm about to throw up. I'm standing on the riser at Trump's New York Election Night headquarters. Fox is on two big screen televisions, framing a stage covered with the American flag and punctuated by two glass cases, each containing a Make America Great Again hat. At the center, there's an empty podium gathering historical significance by the second. We have a big call to make right now, says Megyn Kelly on the screen alongside Bret Baier. The clock strikes 11. Fox camera pans across the studio to a jumbotron to reveal an oversized yellow check mark next to Trump's grinning portrait and a picture of the state of Florida, which he had just won with all 29 electoral votes. The ballroom crowd goes wild. The journalists in the room fall silent. If the future is a blank sheet of paper, this news rips it in two. My phone vibrates. Vibrates again. It doesn't stop. Holy shit, you called it. Flashes a text from a friend who had been insisting, like nearly all the polls on planet Earth, that Hillary was a lock. I pick up my phone and check the New York Times selection forecast. After predicting a Clinton victory for months, it flipped. Trump has a 95% chance of winning the election at that time. Only 2 hours ago, Hillary Clinton had an 85% chance. Holy shit, I did call it. In the 17 months before now, I visited more than 40 states, filling and filing more than 3,800 live TV reports. I did that as the correspondent for NBC News and MSNBC. And I did it with one audience in mind: the American voter. The goal was to explain what he believed in and how he would govern if elected. The job came with all the usual hardships of the campaign, plus a few new ones such as death threats and a gazillion loops of Elton John's Tiny Dancer, a staple of Trump's campaign rallies. I'm proud of the work we've done, but quite ready for it to be over. Thank you very much. Ali Vitale weaves her way over to me on the crowded riser. She's been NBC's embed since early on, a job that means not only attending every single campaign event, but also recording it for posterity. Katie, she says, with desperation in her voice, I'm not prepared for the news she's about to deliver. She says he's going to keep doing rallies, which at this point, you know, 11 months later, that's absolutely true.
Yeah.
First, I don't understand her. He's going to be president. Why would he keep doing campaign rallies? Him, he's already planning victory rallies. My head is a helium balloon. Breathe. The panic mounts. More rallies? I am nearly falling over. More taunting crowds, more round-the-clock live shots, more airports, more ear-splitting Pavarotti. I can't. I just can't. The room goes wavy. My stomach churns. Lights flash in my eyes. I'm never going on vacation. I'm never seeing my friends. I'm never getting my bed back. The brutal, crazy, exasperating year is going to end by not ending at all. He will be president, the most powerful person in the world, and I will be locked in a press pen for the rest of my life. Does anyone really believe he'll respect term limits? I have a vision of myself at 60, him at 100, in some Midwestern convention hall. The children of 2016 supporters are spitting on me, and he is calling my name. She's back there, little Katie, she's back there. Anthony Terrell, my producer, taps me on the shoulder. They want you, he says. I put in my earpiece and I hear Brian Williams and Rachel digesting the news in seconds. I'll be live in millions of homes. I can feel the bile in the back of my throat. But before I can swallow, I hear Brian building to a toss. Katie Terry is just up the block from us after a 510-day Trump campaign, he says. What are you learning from there?
Hang on. Put a pin in it. That was the best Brian Williams I've ever heard in my entire life, sir.
You want to know why?
Sure.
What's his what's his hometown? Where was he born?
I have no idea.
We're born in the same fucking town.
I thought he was born in Tehran. Isn't he an escaped refugee from a war-torn Iranian backwater?
Yeah, his chopper was shot at.
Yeah, I don't remember.
They had to land that fucker.
Yeah.
Well, I've learned that Trump insists that he has the world's greatest memory. But his vision of the future got him this far. I've learned that he has his own version of reality, which is a polite way of saying he can't always be trusted. He always brings his own sense of political decorum. I've heard him insult a war hero, brag about grabbing women by the genitalia, denigrate the judicial system, demonize immigrants, fight with the Pope, doubt the democratic process, advocate torture and war crimes, doubt the size of his junk in a presidential debate, trash the media, endanger my life. I've learned that none of this matters to an electoral college of American voters. They decided that this menacing, indecent post-truth landscape is where they want to live for the next 4 years. Look, I get it. You can't tell a joke without worrying you'll lose your job. Your 20-something can't find work. Your town is boarded up. Patriotism gets called racism. Your food is full of chemicals. Your body is full of pills. You call tech support to reach someone in India. Bills are spiking, but your paycheck is not, and you can't send your kid to school with peanut butter. On top of it all, no one seems to care. You feel like you're screaming at the top of your lungs in a room full of people wearing earplugs. I get it. What I don't get are the little odd ladies in powder pink Trump hats calling me a liar. I don't get the men in Hillary sucks, but not like Monica t-shirts. I don't get why protesting a broken political system also means you need to protest the very notion, the notion of objective truth because of Trump's war on the media. Networks have required a traveling security detail, except for Fox News, which hasn't been as demonized, and CBS, whose main correspondent is a guy who looks like he might be named Major and is. A couple of weeks ago, an advanced staffer at a rally told me not to worry. Save for Trump, he said, you're the most watched person in the room. The Secret Service always has eyes on you. I worry. I also know enough not to mention it. The campaign is really feeling good, I tell Brian, detailing what my sources are describing as the crazy behavior inside the tower at the moment. He himself is supposedly left. He is upstairs spending some time with his family as the prospect of him becoming, smallest of pauses, president of the United States is suddenly a little bit more real than it is even than it was earlier today. I make it through the hit and the nausea passes. I have work to do and nobody cares how tired I am, but that wave of woe lingers. It's unbelievable. All of it, utterly, inescapably, completely unbelievable. And I'm writing these words on the eve of his inauguration, 77 days and at least 77,000 think pieces after election night. I've read countless articles about this election. Some have been insightful. Some have been absurd. At the very first national TV news reporter to cover this juggernaut, I was there from the beginning, covering it every day for nearly 2 years until the shocking end. And I've reached just one conclusion, two conclusions. First, no one can make perfect sense of it. Second, I'm smart enough not to try. This campaign was the most unlikely, ugly, an all-around bizarre campaign in American history. It roiled this country, and with it, my entire little life. I won't pretend to explain it. I will tell you what I saw. That was Kitty Turr from her book. First, right in front of her for an entire year and a half. There you have it.
So she's in counseling for the rest of her life. I mean, if that doesn't do some PTSD to you, I don't know what will.
It's PTSD. Totally. Absolutely. PTSD. Totally. Totally. I was going to go over on another piece as well, taking apart Facebook. But I just thought that this was an interesting table setter, an empathetic piece, so to speak. I have just gone over one of the ugliest periods of time in our life. And many, many times I've said to many, many people, just get up, dust yourself off, just keep marching. I know how hard it is. It's still this hard. Some days I just get up and I just say, I'm just going to just plow through the day and do the best I can. And I think that's all the best that we can do. It's very easy.
Yeah.
Very easy.
Yeah.
Very easy to get fatigued and just completely drop right out. So,
okay, okay. I'm not doing well right now with that sort of thing.
Neither am I.
My burnout level is, I mean, I'm to the point now where, let me make this personal really quick. And guys, you know, that are on my shows, if you guys are listening, just fucking take this as my mental instability. And it is certainly not, you know, me cracking. But over the summers, you know, after the first year, it's hard, difficult to get my guys in to record on Sunday. They're out playing, they're doing this, they're doing that. I mean, Christ, I got one guy, Johnny, you know, who has a show of his own, that decided that instead of that, what he'd do is every fourth Sunday, he'd get friends together and read Shakespeare out loud in his backyard. So, you know, and that's great. I'm not upset about it. Please make this. I'm just saying that's where everybody is. And I, if you know one thing about this particular part of my side of the network, it's I have been on, you know, every single show because I'm the one with the gear that knows how to use it.
Yeah.
So that doesn't count Geek Therapist because we had them doing their own thing, which was fucking awesome. All I did with that one was do edit and production and, you know, final push and imaging and the website and advertising and everything.
And just about fucking everything. There you go. Yeah.
And I mean, that turned into a whole other monster. I'll talk to you about that offline. But so before that, I did 3 years with a conservative radio station where I was the only liberal. You know, in that same time, now pretty much my entire adult professional career, except for certain lapses in between, you know, federal. Once I started working federal elections, it was like you have 6 months of employment and 18 months of looking for work or working in a coffee shop. So since I think my first rally I ever went to, I was 17. We didn't rally a lot. We children of the, you know, early 70s. You guys did most of that shit for us. what do we have? I woke up one day.
Much more limited than you think.
I woke up one day in my third year of Russian and the fucking Cold War was over. So let me just tell you what a pain in the ass that was. But I've been going to rallies and I have been advocating and I have been marching and I have been protesting and I have been messaging and I have been working for political candidates and on political causes since I fucking ran away from home to go to college when I was 16 years old. I am turning 45 years old in 2 weeks. I am so fucking tired. And when I turn on the television or I flip on Facebook or Twitter and I watch people who should fucking know better still arguing over Sanders versus Clinton, especially Mrs. Clinton, Secretary Clinton, Senator Clinton. Oh my God, what in the fuck is the point when there are fourth generation inbred Appalachians with more goddamn political savvy and planning than most of the professional Democrats that are working right now? Take myself away from Democrats. I start looking at lefties and progressives. Okay, yeah, let's legalize. That's fucking great. How about we get pot done before you guys decide to start throwing on psychotropics? You know, how about you learn the incremental workings of a government system instead of being anarchists and wanting to burn the fucking thing down?
I'm on with you. I know you're in the middle of this this run, but one of the things that we talk about in this house is don't get ahead of yourself. You actually take one step at a time. Don't get ahead of the public. I completely understand being visionary and pushing forward. Nevertheless, don't lose people. Don't lose people. When you're a progressive, you have a plan. You have a plan. You have a future plan. But don't get so stuck in the weeds that you lose everybody. Go on.
Well, that actually summed it up. Like, well, okay, well,
that's good.
If you could
that's
say
good.
That without swearing, because
actually,
fine.
You know, I mean, to tell you the truth, I don't know how this is going to go over, but I was glad to hear Clinton last night. I was glad to hear her talk. I'm glad not to hear him talk. I'm glad to hear her talk. Not everything is going to be perfect. We're still stuck in this.
Oh, you're talking about Trump, not Sanders.
No.
You're talking about Sanders?
I mean, the whole thing last year was like, you know, we'll work this damn thing out. And it's just like, you know, one or the other will win and then we'll support the other. Okay. That's been my point of view throughout the whole thing. Okay. I'm not getting into the intramural back and forth, kill or be killed, simply because your person didn't win. I'm not into that.
Yeah.
I'm not into that. And it's fratricidal. And it takes people's confidence and it takes people's enthusiasm and energy out of it. We don't have that kind of credit built up to be able to expend on stuff like that. We have an inordinate number of obstacles in front of us, daunting obstacles, most of which are... A foreign country helped deliver the goods for the current occupant of the White House. Also, by the blessing of the very political party that person was with, we will eventually, it may come to find out later that we find out everything about it. We may find out everything about it and nothing comes because of it, or else it turns everything upside down. I don't know. But... as far as I'm personally concerned, the country that we are familiar with, the things that we have fought for, the progressive ideals, everything else that we have been fighting for, it is, it's everything just to keep your good feeling about yourself up. I mean, I've literally given in to just going back through Monty Python and then just like go through skits just because I can't fucking deal with just turning on reality some days. I just can't fucking deal with it.
Okay, let's take a break because mine's pretty bad too. I need a breather.
You need a breather.
Yeah.
Okay. And
play us out.
You got
any Cole Porter?
Well, okay.
I've said it before and I'll say it again. No more fucking ABBA.
God damn it.
There are 10 jillion podcasts in this crazy world, but there is only one that serves a fresh pot of, hi, how do you do? I'm Tom, your host of the Coffee Cast. My mission is to make it as compelling a listen as you'll find it. I'll talk about all kinds of subjects. Sometimes I'll have guests, good stories, because people listen to what interests them. And sometimes it's the Coffee Cast. So if you're listening as you're texting the 7th draft of a resignation message to that soon-to-be former psychopathic boss, gift shopping rotary phones for your great-great aunt, or skydiving for the first time without a parachute, whoops, welcome to the Coffee Cast. Remember, you can download a fresh CoffeeCast podcast anytime at Stitcher and iTunes, and now on demand on the Progressive Voices app and ProgressiveVoices.com. So until the next pod gets brewed, I'll do my best to keep it fresh. The CoffeeCast Podcast.
Thought that when we come back, we would have a little bit more of a fluid kind of coming back into the interplay of voices back and forth. And all I can just say is I love this little bit right here.
You guys did this! You guys fucking did this! Talking about my guts fucking me up? Fuck you!
you, Jeff.
Hi.
Motel 6, we'll leave the ice on.
All right, so I don't know where to start with this one. I really don't. So I'll do my best.
Just go right ahead and Kevin, start. Here's the introduction music right here.
Kevin. I don't know. Okay, you know what? I've decided that fits. I don't know. It got all awkward, so I'm just going to push forward. Are you ready? Kevin Sorbo. Kevin Sorbo. You might recall him from TV's Hercules. The Legendary Journeys. Well, he's turned into a bit of a conundrum, you see.
Is there another word for that?
Other than the fact that just a few years ago, he became the star of a movie, God Is Not Dead.
Oh, was he in that?
He was the professor.
Oh, God.
Anyway, he let's go back a few years. In 2016, Sorbo did a news interview in which he said the following: I did Hercules for 7 years. It was the most watched show for a good number of years. I'm not quite sure what his criteria is, but I do bet it's the international market.
Either that or nursing homes.
Sure. But then for me to get called in to read for anything, it just dropped drastically when I came out of that conservative Christian closet. 2016 was also the year that he voiced his overwhelming support for the racial profiling of Muslims. Now, here's the thing, and I'm going to tie this into something else that's going on out here in Utah, but is also, you know, a big deal. I think everywhere, and it is something that ought to be paid closer attention to. Sorbo is speaking. He's scheduled to speak with his wife at the Value Voters Conference in Washington, D.C. in October.
Value voters. I love these.
Yeah. This is one of the anti-gay hate groups that the Southern Poverty Law Center has targeted that is owned and run by the Family Research Council. Now, Sorbo is a douche of epic proportion. Let me take that back, because nobody should give a fuck what I believe. I know, having read the biographies, autobiographies, the footnotes, the side notes, and the journals of the founding fathers of these United States, that for the majority of them, they were deists who really weren't all that hip on the whole Jesus thing and did their best to protect against us having a one religion government.
Because they came from one, the Anglican Church in England.
Right. But even then,
run by the king.
Well, not to bog down in that, but let's just keep in mind that when the Anglicans were here to get away from their, you know, to find their religious freedom, they still thought that the Catholics worshiped the devil. You know, because maybe they're not happy Anglicans, but they still fucking hated the Catholics, which,
Catholics are Mary worshiping mackerel snappers.
Right. And I'm just saying, their God isn't strong enough. He has to have a goddamn bureaucracy. You know, you can't pray to him right away. You got to find a saint to pray to instead, which is fine. You know, that's what I get to tell. I'm a micromanager. I'd be a bad Jesus. I'd be too busy. You know, I have a hard time letting go. Anyway, so...
Bless you, Jesus.
Sorbo's an asshole. There's no doubt about it. When you put together the reunion shows and everybody talks about this and that and the other, he's not the one who pops up. He's not the one that people talk about. He is more than happy to point at a non-Christian and let you know what a bad American he is. he can't abide a liberal. Doesn't like progressives. Okay? Doesn't much care for libertarians, according to the fucking words that fly out of his fucking mouth whenever somebody talks to him about this sort of thing. He's going to share the podium at the Value Voters Conference with gay haters, Texas Governor Greg Abbott, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, former representative, wingnut and fucking lunatic. Also, a lady who hates her husband but doesn't know it yet, Michelle Bachmann. Founder of the anti-LGBT Liberty Council, Matt Staver, Tony Perkins from the FRC. He's basically, he and his wife are going to a conference of hating people, people who hate groups, hate, lots of hate, lots of bigotry and hate, you know, probably being catered. You know, by Chick-fil-A.
By the cake people.
Either yeah, cake people, Chick-fil-A, and Cracker Barrel. And he's gonna chat in front of them. And it's important to remember that the Family Research Council was designated as a hate group because of its long and documented history of publicly supporting criminal sanctions against gay people, using shit science to promote the idea that being gay is morally and physically unhealthy. And they also promote that ex-gay therapy, conversion therapy, you know, that Mike Pence loves so much. So when a guy like Sorbo, now I need you to understand for just a minute how the entertainment industry works. And I don't mean this. I am honest to Christ. I am not perpetuating a stereotype, and I'm not saying this for comic effect, and I realize that my overall essence of hilarity sometimes leaks through to my serious notes, and I can't help it. I'm fucking hilarious, but see, I crack myself up. But you know, Hollywood's gay, you idiot. You fucking idiot. Every asshole that ever had to put goddamn makeup on your pox-marked face, chances are they were gay. And if they're not, they're probably dating someone that is. You know, and if they're not, they're related to someone there is, or their best friend is someone who is. There, I know gay stuntmen. I know gay costumers. I know gay grips. It is an industry that, for the most part, has done a very good job at letting people be themselves as long as they get their fucking work done. And it happens to be that that is a great place for folks of the LGBT and Q persuasion to go and to not find harassment in their day-to-day work. It's not so much that that's where the gay folks are as that's where the gay folks can be gay folks without worrying that a douche like Kevin fucking Sorbo, who really should never have achieved, again, no karma, there is no karma, because this dude should be the assistant manager of a rundown, failing grocery store in the middle of backwater Idaho, as opposed to somebody famous for portraying what was a hero, and more importantly, a bisexual hero. The mythic Hercules was bi. He'd put himself in whatever said yes. I'm just going to go ahead and give him consent because.
He put himself in just whatever said yes.
Yeah. He was a badass, and he boned both directions. He was Hercules. He could fuck who he wanted. And you played him for 7 years, and the only reason you haven't starved to death, you no-talent hack, was because you knew how to lift weights. You could read dialogue. Not well. Not well. There's a reason I watched Xena and not Hercules. Well, there's 2, 3, 4, 7. Anyway, Kevin Sorbo. Now, I'll tell you my horrific story of Kevin Sorbo. Kevin Sorbo was in town here for the Salt Lake City Comic Con a few years ago. And there was, I think, 3 years ago. And there was a bit of a brouhaha because he is who he is and he says what he says. But race and religion baiting in Utah, it's usually a dead end. When you point at somebody and tell them that they're being inappropriate or calling racist, it is important to remember that until 1978, the official religion of Utah wouldn't let black people have any credibility.
That's absolutely true.
Say something else. I got to take a sip of water.
Indeed. And the history is long. It's a long history.
It's not that long. It's only 100 or so years old.
Changed over time.
Yeah. And there are still people in this religion. And if, you know, they don't believe me, they can bite me because I am related to most of them, who still have problems with race and think that that wasn't God himself dropping revelation onto that current president, or that then president of the church, the prophetess and revelator of the church in 1978. They think it was just that particular person bowing and kowtowing to societal pressures, which is one of the reasons why black people got to be priests in bishops and whatever, got the priesthood in the Mormon church, and the Mormons fought the hell to keep the ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment from pushing through. And I don't care what you say, ladies, the 14th Amendment is not enough. You need more. Okay, sorry. We can roll it back later if it proves to be too much and suddenly all men are nothing but sperm banks and there's only 10 of us left and kept in a warehouse. And yes, I am counting myself among them. Because only the cream of the crop, babe. But
cream. Indeed.
So just this last, a couple of weeks ago. Now, for those of you that are crossover listeners and have heard me, I have had my problems with the Salt Lake Comic Con before. They don't like me very much because most of my out loud work is political. But anybody who knows me and has known me for any amount of time knows that first I am geek, then I am wonk.
First geek. Wait, hold on a second. I got to do this. First geek, then wonk.
In a world. They haven't much cared for me in the last couple of years, and that's fine. You know, I am an acquired taste, much like good scotch.
20-year-old.
At least. There's a nice 32 Livet that is just amazing. Goes down 12, smooth.
12's acceptable. 20's where you want to be.
12's good, and if you put ice in it or mix it with something, that's fine because it's 12. Once you're older than 30 years, you really shouldn't put anything in scotch other than a couple drops of branch water. So here's the thing. This is going to slant a little geek. Just hang in there just for a couple of minutes. Just bear down and walk with me. So there's been a complaint that started as they call themselves a Comic-Con, and yet this year, in next week, as we drop this, they will only have 2 panels on comics. Two.
Two.
What? Out of the tens, near hundreds, a couple hundred panels that they have, they only have 2 on comics, and then the rest is banking on famous people. Fine, whatever. It's not my fucking show. However, the LGBT community in a meeting mentioned that they would like more representation. And an argument started, and what happened in that argument is long, and I'm not going to get into it. But what finally came out was that one of the 2 founders, Brian Brandenburg, said that the problem with LGBT people is that they say that they don't understand life, you know, as a gay person, and what they need to understand is that the gay people don't understand how hard it is to be a straight person these days. They don't know what it's like to be a straight white person. To which I have only to say, yeah, they do, because chances are they have had to spend fucking years pretending to be that so that people like you wouldn't point at them and go, weird and different, you don't get what you want because you're weird and different from me. So we are having our own little internal power struggle here, in that this is the biggest fucking thing in geek culture that is in the Western United States. You know, not the coastal, that doesn't count. You know, the West, the real West, sir.
The Intermountain West.
Yeah, not you cheese weenies and wine drinkers out there on the coast. But, you know, this is huge for us here. It's big, and it meant something. And now, you know I got ran off because the guys that own it are conservative and Republicans, and they are, you know, delightful, successful capitalists that have found a way to make bank on geeks. That's fine. I have been that target demographic for years. I understand the fucking balance, and I have a goddamn, you know, fucking office full of toys to prove that I am a victim only of my own greedy hubris. I know what they're doing, and I have purchased in. However, we have now crossed a line where a wealthy, white, straight guy is saying to people that he is a part of, holding down and holding back. You just don't understand how hard it is to be a wealthy, white, straight guy. And I can't believe you're picking on me.
There's enough of them.
There's plenty. They're running the show. That's why he's sitting up there in the $2,000 fucking shiny suit telling people that are just what, like, hey, do? Could we talk about how, you know, we need more representation? You don't get it. You don't get more representation because you don't know how hard it is to be on top. It's hard to be on top.
Well, I mean, speaking, but go on.
That's really it. So our internal kerfuffle is this is the biggest fucking thing in town right now. It'll change next year, I think, but I'm not going. I'm not going as press. I'm not going as a participant, and I'm sure shit not going with my wallet.
You're coming in with your ideology, and I'm talking to you big, straight, white, uber Christians, and you're walking into a territory that is not yours. Okay, when you start fucking around with other people who are in that, in the geek community, in the Comic-Con community, in that, you're dealing with a world of people who are dealing with ideas and concepts that are open. Completely the antithesis of you and your small-minded capitalistic bullshit.
For the most part.
For the most part.
You got guys like Frank Miller that... somewhere after 9/11, went completely off his fucking nut and decided that all Muslims were bad.
Well, he was lost.
Hey, that doesn't change the fact, you know, that Dark Knight Returns is still the goddamn graphic novel that saved comic books. Just means that now he's a fucking lunatic. And this may have been it. This could have easily been a misspeak. And what happened instead is that he continued to double down and double down and double down. As you know, like he had an untouchable run of luck on blackjack, and then he busted every fucking time and just made himself come across as more and more of an asshole. The problem is, this is a con, and I mean that in every fucking sense of the word, that makes millions and millions of dollars every time they hold a show, and they do it twice a year here, and yet they don't pay their staff. They have a volunteer staff that's a couple of hundred people wide, and they don't get paid. They get in so that they can spend the money they didn't make doing the work for 8 hours. They can get in that day, you know, and they have a small staff in the office that's full time. And trust me, up until 2 weeks ago, I would have stabbed my mother in the face to get a job there. Make no mistake, no matter how much I know they dislike me because I am a screaming purple liberal, you know, I still want it in because that was it here. And now I'm like, you know, you treat your people shit, you know, you don't pay people. I paid interns the last campaign I ran, you know, I didn't pay them much, but I paid them $50 a week because I was going to work the shit out of them. And at the very least, I needed to know they had bus fare and food, you know?
Yeah.
So
of course,
even a fucking per diem for food would be worth it. But
people eat.
Yeah.
People eat, they gotta live. Of course. Absolutely it would do that.
But that's just where I'm at. Is it's like I can't be who I am. I can't fight for what I fight for. I can't spend time with people that I love. That if I were to then go, it all matters except where that is crossed over into my love of Star Trek, Batman, and Thor. I can't do it. I can't go to the biggest, you know, geek thing because I may be pissy that there's not a lot of comic book panels, but fuck, man. You know, there's still cool panels. There's still cool people. There's still, you know, up until recently, there'd be fucking Stan Lee. You know, Dick Van Dyke's coming, for Christ's sake. I love Dick Van Dyke.
Shit.
But yeah, you tell me how Comic-Con-y something is when fucking Dick Van Dyke shows up. Huh? Bad Cockney, ain't it? All right. Oh, that's it for me this week.
All right. That's excellent. All right. So you're walking into my territory now, boy. So you keep your conservative ideology to yourself.
Okay.
This is free range thinking here.
Yeah. I had to explain to one of my kids today what free range parenting is. At which point they were like, Well, that's kind of like you, except you have some rules. I'm like, yeah, stay out of my booze. Don't fuck around in my office. Don't date boys. What else do you want from me? Otherwise, don't touch the hot thing. You get that warning 3 times, and then it's on you, kid.
Oh, God almighty. So, what would you like to do at this point?
War. It's fantastic.
You crossed my line of death.
Yeah. You know, I think as I just happened to see this, Harry Dean Stanton passed.
Just came really? Across the wall.
Just came across the teletype. Just happened. 91, 92. Harry Dean Stanton.
Man.
As of today. He was an alien.
He was in everything.
Yeah, he was in everything, man.
He was in the first Avengers movie.
Oh, my God.
He was in the warehouse talking to Peter Parker.
He's like in this warehouse, and he's just like kind of go, yeah, here are your pants.
Are you an alien? Because if you're not, there's something wrong with you. Just like, fuck yeah. Great line. Well, that's sad.
With that.
Somewhere there is more appropriate. We're going out on dead people music.
Yeah. But it's show business. And if anything, he typified show business. So, anyway, thanks,
Harry. As a jobbing actor is what he did.
Right. And thanks, Harry Dean. And thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, buddy.
Alien. All right.
I shall impersonate a man. Come, enter into my imagination and see him. Bony, hollow-faced, eyes that burn with the fire of inner vision. He conceives the strangest project ever imagined. To become a knight-errant and sally forth into the world righting all wrongs. His name, Don Quixote de la Mancha. Hear me now, the bleak and unbearable world. Thou art base and debauched as can be. And a knight with his banners all bravely unfurled now hurls down his gauntlet to thee. I am I, Don Quixote, the Lord of La Mancha. My destiny calls and I go. And the wild winds of fortune shall carry me onward, or whithersoever they blow. Whithersoever they blow. Onward to glory I go.
I'm Sancho, yes, I'm Sancho. I follow my mind.
And wizards and servants of sin, all your dastardly doings are past. For a holy endeavor is now to begin, and virtue shall triumph at last. I am a Don Quixote, the Lord of La Mancha. My destiny calls and I go. And the winds of fortune shall carry me onward, oh, whithersoever they blow.
I'm his friend.
Whithersoever they blow.